chair over here, not here yet? Well, I understand there's a, you got your hand up for some reason? Well, why don't we, everybody here for the second case? Southworth? All set?
Yep.
Let's wait, I guess here he is, okay. Just in time, we'll get started then. Morning, first case of the morning will be Bressner versus Ambrosiak, I'm sorry, and you're Mr. Bullwinkle?
Yes. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm George Bullwinkle. I'm here to argue the case with my client, Kermit Bressner, against the two husband and wife defendant, Dennison and Shirley Ambrosiak, and the corporation which they own and control, AMZO Zip Mailing Services. This case is about a judgment, an uncollected judgment. It's told solely in the 20-page complaint because there was never an opportunity to make a record of any other kind. It was dismissed on motion. The defendants never filed any affidavits, so it's the complaint and the facts alleged in the complaint that have to guide us here. Mr. Bressner holds a judgment obtained in 1985 for almost $500,000 for fraud because in 1981, Dennis Ambrosiak bought Mr. Bressner's TV and appliance business under false pretenses, and shortly after that, its merchandise, which was to be collateral for the purchase money, either disappeared or was seized by other creditors. And Dennis and Shirley filed for personal bankruptcy shortly thereafter. Mr. Bressner's fraud judgment was entered in 1985 and declared non-dischargeable by the bankruptcy court. In 1988, Dennis and Shirley were discharged of all their other debts and obligations except for this one. So what was the situation with Mr. and Mrs. Ambrosiak in 1988 in the mid-1980s? Dennis, as our complaint alleges, was an experienced businessman, having run a variety of retail businesses, though many ended badly. He had this big judgment hanging over his head, which he couldn't shed by going through bankruptcy again. His wife, Shirley, was a housewife with no business experience, at home with two teenage children. They were living with Dennis's mother and stepfather in a home in Wonder Lake, Illinois, which in 1986 was destroyed by fire under circumstances which caused the insurer to reject their claim for lost property, a rejection which a McHenry County jury eventually agreed with.
At the time his, I guess it was, did he go through a personal bankruptcy?
Yes.
And then they went through some sort of a joint bankruptcy?
Or no, they went at the same time. They filed on the same time.
Okay, so before that, this judgment that was not discharged, was there some allegation at the time that he had hidden assets or assets that he hadn't disclosed?
I don't know that. For the subsequent investigation, which appears again in the complaint, disclosed there were apparently other assets that were not disclosed in the bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. And subsequent events suggest that may have been true, because after the mid-80s, the Ambrosiak's fortunes improved remarkably. In 1992, they acquired and moved into a 3.5-acre country home in Bull Valley near Woodstock, complete with swimming pool. Price, $470,000.
And who's that entitled to?
Shirley. Shirley took title to that and every subsequent asset in her own name. It was remodeled, office facilities put in on the bottom floor, and AMZO Zip Mailing Services, Shirley's corporation, was run out of it. Shirley owns all the stock. Dennis, as we allege in our complaint, the only facts we have to go on, was then and always has been the principal factor in starting, managing, and running that company.
Mr. Bullwinkle, do you know or can you cite to any case in which the transfer of human capital constitutes a fraudulent transfer?
I cannot because I don't think there is one. Nor do I think human capital is relevant here. Human capital, as defined by the opinions of this court, is an intangible that cannot, by its nature, be levied on by a creditor. A college education, a spirit of entrepreneurship, all those things are the spark plugs that make a business go or make it successful. But you can't put them on a balance sheet, and a trustee in bankruptcy can't value them. But we're not talking about that here.
What
you certainly seemed to be talking about that here in the brief.
No, Judge Rovner, let me say that the fraud that we are alleging here is a continuous pattern of Dennis Ambrosiak earning, through his efforts, what in any other setting would have been a good wage, a wage which could be followed and attached and garnished by my client. But no.
Could that be some sort of a tax fraud?
Yes, I suppose it could.
And if there is, let's put this in the context that you labeled it. You said that his wife was a housewife. I assume that means someone who stays home with the kids and runs the home and all that.
From the complaint, and that's all that this court or I know about it, that was what she was doing.
Now, there's a lot of value in that, too, isn't there?
Oh, indeed there is.
So in anyone who, if someone is at work and the spouse stays at home, runs the household and does all the bookkeeping and does all kinds of other things, there's a lot of, we've referred to human capital or something, that is not either taxable but is certainly valuable.
Judge Mannion, that's quite right. And there's any number of doctors who were put through medical school by their wives and in that exact fashion. But
some lawyers even got through law school.
let me change the hypothetical a little bit. What if Dennis and Shirley were not working for Shirley's company, but were working for a company owned by a third party? And Dennis went to the boss and said, you know, I have some personal reasons here. I would like you to take my paycheck and don't give it to me, but just add that money onto Shirley's paycheck so she can take it home. It's all going to the same place anyway. I don't think there's anyone in this room who would disagree that that is fraud.
But Mr. Bullwinkle, do banks care if a business owner's husband is offering free advice and labor to a business? Does a bank care?
Judge Rovner, from your question, you've also suggested the answer, but I think that the better question is, would a bank care if it knew that it had not been told everything about the status of its borrower?
Well, let me ask you this. Let's say Shirley had been seeking advice from a business planner or a fortune teller. Do you think the bank really cares? Does the bank merely, you know, want to see a valid business plan and some proof of assets?
Well, we'll have to go to our own common experience with banks here because we don't have any bankers' affidavits or anything in the file. But let's look at what a bank has to be doing. It's a federally chartered institution. It has guidelines and bylaws it has to follow to protect not only its investors' assets and its depositors' assets, but also the assets of the U.S. Treasury, which are pledged to protect it in the event of failure. And for that purpose, a bank will customarily know its borrower. It has to be sure not just that there is some collateral there to be executed on, because that's not enough. A bank doesn't want to
be... But the bank's doing pretty well here, isn't it?
The banks, as far as we know, did not suffer a loss. But I don't think that's the test.
Well, is it a test then that, as you know, in some loans, a bank will require key man insurance. The so-called key man insurance, because if that person leaves, then the company's in big trouble,
indeed,
they think. And that's often with a very closely held and small business. But suppose there is a top salesman. The bank doesn't really know who that is. They just know sales are good at that sort of thing. And then someone hires away that top salesman, and then that company could be in jeopardy. Yeah, that's an impact. But it wouldn't seem that the bank would be needing all that information about who all the top salespeople are and are they still on board and all that, would they?
That's a good question, but I think that a properly run bank will know its borrowers to the extent of knowing all the aspects of the business that could impact on the ability of that borrower to make the payments to support that debt service.
Let me just say that, believe me, I understand your frustration here. But, you know, you claim in your brief that the banks needed to know about Dennis's role in the business so they might evaluate the importance of his contribution should he suddenly disappear from the business scene. But that's true of any employee of any business. When a bank makes a loan, it can never know whether a key employee of a business might die, might change jobs, might become too ill to work. And following up on Judge Mannion's, you know, question statement, that's not usually part of a bank's assessment for a loan.
I understand your question, but in this case, the banks were told that Shirley Ambrosiak was pulling down over $100,000 a year income, and it's our allegation in the complaint that that wasn't earned by her, it was earned by Dennis, and not to tell the banks that truth was a material withholding. I see my time is up, and I would like to have the rest on rebuttal.
Sure. Mr. Chmiel? Chmiel?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, apologize for being delayed in traffic. My name is Michael Chmiel. I'm counsel for the defendants. Your Honors, I and my clients have been fighting this case, at least with me at their side, for 3 years. There's no case here, there never was, and we're hoping that this honorable court will do what we've asked the court to do and deny this appeal. I believe this is a frivolous appeal. I believe there's no cause of action under RICO in any stretch of the imagination.
Did Dennis Ambrosiak's 1983 convictions for mail fraud and copyright infringement have anything to do with hiding assets or with Mr. Bresner?
To the best of my knowledge, Your Honor, absolutely not. Furthermore, along those lines, if I can add this, I think under RICO, the pattern of racketeering that's required that I believe Mr. Bullwinkle suggests, it begins with those causes of action, as I think Your Honor will acknowledge, as I think this court will observe from the record, occurred more than 10 years previous to the purported bank fraud. And to go on the bank fraud thing, which is, I think, the crux of Judge Lefkoe's ruling, which is, I think, the crux of the illness of this complaint, there is no bank fraud here, Your Honors. You have to intend to defraud a bank. There's no allegation that there was even an intention to defraud a bank. And let's say, hypothetically, that there was some sort of alleged purported scheme that could have involved what Mr. Bresner suggests to this honorable court, to the court downstairs. Doesn't it belie his argument that the end result, the end game of that fraud would have been to benefit Mr. Bresner himself? Because after all, without that purported alleged fraud, according to Mr. Bresner, according to his attorneys, this mere housewife would have never been able to amass the wealth that she has amassed for her family. If anything, Shirley Ambrosiak should be given an award, and instead, 18 years after this person has chased the Ambrosiak family, they're still here today in a federal courthouse.
Who would be awarding her for what's going on here? Who would be awarding her for Mr. Bresner still being owed $500,000? Who would be? I'd like to know that.
Judge, I would like to give Shirley Ambrosiak an award because, quite candidly, Shirley Ambrosiak has never owed Mr. Bresner a penny. None of the litigation is poised against Shirley Ambrosiak. The bankruptcy proceedings, as voluminous as they were, and there have been allegations as to the content of the judgment, those bankruptcy proceedings were never stated against Shirley Ambrosiak. The only scheme, if you will, the only obligation that purportedly comes to this court's attention is this allegation that Shirley Ambrosiak somehow 18 years or so, 16 years or so later, concocted the scheme to defraud these banks and to somehow give Mr. Bresner the short end of the stick. That's absolutely far from the truth, Your Honor. It's far from the imagination.
Well, it's clear that Mr. Ambrosiak is not interested in accumulating any assets. Okay, so he wants to be asset-free because those assets can't be attached on the basis of this continuing and renewed judgment.
Judge, for the purpose of the pleadings, I have to accept and say yes, Your Honor. That's what the pleadings suggest.
So we can look at what the district court referred to as somewhat obvious. This is what's going on. And the question is it somehow illegal, somehow fraudulent? Does it violate some statute or act or some criminal effort? If I understand it, that Mrs. Ambrosiak and the company are, I guess, they don't owe Mr. Bresner anything.
Correct, Your Honor.
And so the question is, I guess there's no way to attach any of her property through him. There's no vicarious liability or whatever, joint liability or something. So he, as long as he legally stays debt-free, that they can't attach it. Now, that comes back to one issue. Is he legally debt-free, or is there some other law that they're not, maybe they can't pursue it. Maybe there is a tax obligation that he's not paying, but that's not an issue here.
Judge, I believe the crux of the law, in all candor, is the 13th Amendment to the Constitution. I've done collection law for years. Nobody can force an individual such as Dennis Ambrosiak to work. It's called slavery and is outlawed. Secondarily, there is no asset.
Slavery only get paid.
Slavery.
Mr. Bresner claims that there was some property in Pewaukee, Wisconsin, that was not listed as an asset in the bankruptcy petition. Is this true?
Judge, to the best of my knowledge, the bankruptcy filings were accurate. I do not know anything beyond that, and in all candor, I just do not know that. Furthermore, Your Honor, as far as the bankruptcy filings go, the bankruptcy case occurred, as I recall, somewhere throughout the mid-1980s. If there were a fraudulent transfer action, if there were something that Mr. Bresner could have brought, that would be a cause of action for that bankruptcy trustee to pursue.
Or one of the creditors that got discharged.
Perhaps.
Well, they got, and I shouldn't say creditors whose debt was discharged is what I mean. And they may have, but his debt was not discharged. He maintained his debt. So he went away from the bankruptcy intact.
That's true, Your Honor. Yeah, that's very true. Getting back to Your Honor's question about what obligation does does Dennis Ambrosiak have to earn money, to have assets to pay Mr. Bresner, Judge, I don't know of any. I'm just beyond knowing of what obligation he has, other than if he had assets, then sure, the judgment and the judgment lien that might attach would attach to those assets, and he'd have every obligation and ability to take some of those assets. What's not pled is throughout the course of the last 16, 18 years, whatever it's been, there have been numerous attempts to collect. I think there are allegations or suggestions of those attempts in the pleadings. There have been attempts.
Tell me this. Do you think it matters what role Dennis plays in AMSO?
Judge, I don't believe it matters because I have a law firm. My wife serves as the accountant. We all, perhaps like Judge Mannion, I believe, suggested spouses have put their spouses through law school or medical school or whatever the case may have been. I think it's very commonplace for a spouse to help another spouse. And moreover, regardless whether it's a spouse, if I want to give away my time, I believe to some, I don't know of a requirement that requires me to take payment for my time. If I want to give pro bono services, that's absolutely my priority or my privilege.
Even if you're playing a shell game. An individual is being defrauded.
Hypothetically, even in that circumstance, I don't believe that's a circumstance here at all, Your Honor.
Don't you think it's possible that we need discovery in order to ascertain what role Dennis plays in the company?
Absolutely not, Your Honor, because the fact of the matter is, as Judge Lefkoe ruled, there's no cause of action under RICO. There's no predicate act. There's no bank fraud. There aren't the elements necessary in RICO. If you go on to the purported state law claims, there's no civil conspiracy. There's no constructive trust. There's no underlying wrongdoing by Shirley. Last but not least...
Well, how do we know this?
Because there's no allegation that Shirley did anything to Kermit Bresner. There is no allegation that Shirley did anything to Kermit Bresner. The allegation is that she defrauded a bank.
Well,
where
yeah.
is the bank?
Well,
they're not here.
Well, for example, let's say that Shirley, although she's the owner and she's the CEO in name, never went to the office, but that Dennis went every day, made all the business decisions, formulated the business plan, supervised the workers, handled all the money. Would it be fraud on the bank for Shirley to apply for and get the bank loan under those circumstances?
I don't know, Your Honor, thinking it through. I don't believe so, because if she were the one that signed the credit application that says, I am responsible for what I'm giving you here, for this business, for the operation of the business, and if something happened, and if later perhaps the bank got damaged because of what might be proven to be a fraud, then perhaps there is a fraud. But until that happens, I don't believe, if I think it through correctly, Your Honor, I don't believe that there would be a fraud in that circumstance. Lastly, just to clear all the points, there's a declaratory judgment suggestion. Mr. Bresner is just trying to collect debt here. I think one of the things that comes through in a lot of case law is RICO. What's the purpose of RICO? I think that's the biggest crux of this case. And it's not to address garden variety disputes. In all candor, I don't believe we should be here in federal court discussing a collection case, a garden variety dispute that happened 18 years ago. Mr. Bresner's trying to collect it, and I have compassion. I do a lot of collection in my private practice. But the fact of the matter is, this is like using a sledgehammer to hit a thumbtack in when you can't even hit the thumbtack with the sledgehammer. In RICO, there's no predicate act, there's no pattern of racketeering pled, and I believe Judge Lefkoe is absolutely correct in her ruling in that regard. Furthermore, in the other parts of the fourth bite at the apple, the constructive trust, the civil conspiracy, and the declaratory judgment aspects of that last attempt to get before the district court, there were none of the necessary ingredients to give a complaint, to get a complaint beyond Rule 12b-6. There is just not a case here. What Dennis Ambrosiak may have done, as Judge Lefkoe suggested in her record, the record is clear. It's a federal record. Throughout the bankruptcy proceeding, does not get him the Model Citizen Award, and I think anybody would acknowledge that.
So he doesn't get any awards.
I don't believe he does, Your Honor. Although, quite frankly, there are allegations. My client has told me about service of the initial complaint or whatever, but we've gone beyond that, because I think in this litigation, our role is: does this litigation belong in any courtroom? Does this litigation against Shirley Ambrosiak, the business that she founded and created in 1994, 10 years later, does it deserve this attack? No, it doesn't. And the fact that she went out and got bank loans, again, in my world, doing a lot of commercial law, I think she does get an award for that, because she helped, she got her family through a tough time, she started a business, and she's surviving today in that business.
But we don't know Dennis's role in the business.
We do know that Dennis, based upon the pleadings, does not have a monetary role. As far as his actual role, I don't believe it's been pled. I don't believe there's anything to substantiate the fact that he, in fact, runs AMSO. There are only the allegations that Shirley Ambrosiak is nothing but a mere housewife. That's the crux of their case, Your Honor.
Well, whoever ran the company did a better job than whoever ran the paint company, apparently, or whatever the other one was. What was the other company? The one that went bankrupt? The one that he owed the money on.
It was a video.
Oh, video. I'm sorry.
Business.
Whatever it was.
Yes, you're right.
Whatever is running this one apparently worked. But it's clear, though, that whatever, we just take the allegations as they are, and that is that he's essentially running the show. But there's no underlying bank fraud, no hook, even though it may be frustrating, there's not, as you would say, no legal way to get to him.
There's no cause of action, Your Honor. Even if he were running the show, and I don't believe it's appropriate to go beyond the record. I believe there may have been some pleadings about his illness. Even if he were running the show, there's no allegation that he owns the corporation. There's no allegation that he is earning any money from the corporation. There's no allegation that he owns any of the assets. The fact of the matter is, this is, again, a last ditch within the 20-year statute of repose attempt by Kermit Bresner to reach at straws to get something. And I think it's mighty ironic that he waited from 1994 until 2001 or 2002, whenever the complaint was filed, I believe it was 2002, I apologize, to bring this cause of action to the court. He waited at least 8 years to bring this cause of action. Your Honors, there's no cause of action here. I would encourage you and ask that you and pray that you uphold Judge Lefkoe's ruling. I think it was appropriate. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Bullwinkle.
Thank you, Your Honor. A couple of points, partly for clarification, partly for emphasis. There's no question that the complaint alleges that, and I'll quote, that the assets that they hold now were acquired primarily, if not exclusively, through the post-bankruptcy efforts, industry, and earnings of Dennis Ambrosiak, all of which he's intentionally concealed through the artifice of causing them to appear in Shirley's name. That's why there is a conspiracy count against Shirley. That is where the liability will arise for Shirley, because she knowingly went along with this. Now, this complaint consists of a large bundle of facts, and the question is there one or more legal boxes into which they will fit? And Judge Lefkoe said they weren't. They did not. We believe that they fit in some or all. Now, Judge Mannion correctly pointed out that Dennis's earlier felony convictions are really beside the point, and they shouldn't be considered in connection with the RICO. That happened before the judgment, so let's put those aside. The more interesting question is whether, if there was bank fraud, and we say that the cases interpreting the bank fraud statute 1344.1 clearly show that failure to disclose important information is a fraud, who was injured? Well, I don't think anyone had to be injured by that. The purpose is to protect banks, to protect the federal treasury. But in this case, the target of the conspiracy wasn't the bank, it was Mr. Bresner. Everything that was done, as alleged in this complaint, was done to keep Mr. Bresner from acquiring, from being able to levy on his assets. Being the target of the fraud, we believe he has standing under RICO, and certainly under the other theories of conspiracy, constructive trust, alter ego theory, which we were not allowed to plead in the amended complaint. What if the banks had been known the truth? Would they have refused a loan? Possibly they might have done that, in which case Dennis might have had to get a job and get a salary and a paycheck that Mr. Bresner could garnish. That wasn't what Mr. Ambrosiak wanted, but it was what Mr. Bresner wanted and was legally entitled to do, but because of the acts complained of, he's been frustrated. And for those reasons, we request that the court vacate the judgment of dismissal in the trial court, reinstate some or all of the several causes of action set forth, both original and as amended, and to remand the case for discovery and eventual trial. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The case was taken under advisement.